Welcome back, everybody, to the Sight to the Blind. Brother Ron talked about over at Truth, the second Exodus. And one of the things he brought up that struck me was in Exodus 3, 13 and 15, it says, "And Moshe said unto Elohim, Behold, when I come unto the children of Yashareel, and shall say unto them, The Elohai of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And Yahuwah said unto El Moshe, Ahaya Asher Ahaya. And he said, Thus shall you say unto the children of Yashareel, Ahaya has sent me unto you. I am has sent me unto you." I remember we went through this whole thing with Become Set Apart, that he changed the name so many times to the Tetragrammaton. And then he was like, no, the Most High's name is Ahaya, which is only a title that says to call him I am at that time. And Elohim, Yahuwah, said moreover unto El Moshe, "Thus shall you say unto the children of Yashareel, Yahuwah Elohai of your fathers, the Elohai of Abraham, the Elohai of Yitzhak, and the Elohai of Yaakov, has sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my mention unto all generations." Now, why do you think the Most High Yahuwah did not want the children of Yashareel to know his name so quickly? Obviously, they knew him in the earlier generations, like around Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But why, when the children of Yashareel were in captivity for so many years, why didn't he just tell Moshe, hey, tell them my name is Yahuwah Sevaot, or Yahuwah Elohaka, or Yahuwah Elohanyu? Why did he say, I am that I am? Because what Brother Ron covered is when they were in the wilderness, what did they do? They started complaining, murmuring, going to Moshe saying, we don't have water. What are we going to do? We don't have food to eat. What are we going to do? Our livestock, our children are thirsty. What are we going to do? So they blamed and put it all on Moshe. Moshe didn't have the power to call out the Yashareli for blasphemy. This is why I think the Most High Yahuwah did not want his name in the mouths of the children of Yashareel at that time, because they truly would have been destroyed for blaspheming the name of Yahuwah. Now, that's what it means by taking his name in vain. Saying, God damn it, and Lord, see, Jesus Christ, like, that's not taking the God's name in vain, because that's not names that are titles, and that it's a pagan name made up after the letter J was morphed from the letter I in 1524. So that's not taking the name in vain. It's saying that, oh, Yahuwah is not going to do this. Yahuwah is not going to cause us to get any food or manna from heaven. It's his fault we're out here in the wilderness dying. So they put it all on Moshe so the Most High would not destroy the nation of Yashareel, because he knew exactly what was in their minds, their thoughts, and what they were going to murmur against them. So when we go into the wilderness again, if we're not already being conditioned to get ready to go into the wilderness through the 7 years of tribulation, because it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough. And it's not going to be something that we're going to do to point out and say, oh, they're doing this by numerology. Oh, they're doing this by this. I'm telling you, it's going to be completely different from the system we are used to. This is why I tell you, you need to start learning a little bit about numerology. I mean, it ain't that far-fetched, and it's not reaching. There's a reason why there's a book called the Book of Numbers in the Bible. Where do you think they get it from? There's literally a book called Numbers in Scripture, and how they total and the sum of everything. Even when given the measurements of New Jerusalem, is in Revelation and it is in Ezekiel. The measurements, the cubits, how everything is laid out with reeds to the precise number. And that number repeats itself all through Scripture. It's either sevens or 12s, 40s. So when the Most High comes to visit this world with destruction, famine, death, war, I guarantee you, I can almost guarantee you that it won't be, oh, we'll look at the date and it'll be 33. Oh, we'll look at the time and it's some formation of 322 or 666. It's going to be odd to us. It may come on a Wednesday, because usually I said this before that they have protests mainly on Saturdays. They do these little rituals and psyops with mass populations on Saturdays because it's Saturn's day. It may come on a Monday. It may look like on a Thursday. It's going to be complete upheaval and chaos because everybody's already situated on this time frame where it's based on Satan or Freemasons numerology. So this is where the confusion is going to set in when you're not readily prepared for what's coming, which you usually are preparing to come on a weekend. When have you ever seen them protest on a Wednesday at 2 o'clock? When have you seen them go to war on a random day, on a random month? Like Christmas. When have you ever seen us go to war or prepare for war on a Christmas or on a Easter? These events that are going to be on that kind of calendar is going to be odd to us. So going back to the second Exodus, when we are in this wilderness, now because we know the name, we know better not to blaspheme, because obviously we have evidence of what the Most High was going to do to the nation of Yasharel, which caused them to slightly blaspheme against Moshe, but also murmur against the Most High God. We already got the evidence of what not to do, which is why he told us his name now. So when the tribulation happens, we call on him in righteousness and not call on him to complain. But he still is going to purge us, or purge the rebels from out of our nation. Even the Gentiles, he's going to purge us. So those who know the truth, don't blaspheme, don't stumble, don't become a snare to themselves or to somebody else. That's why I see some of the brothers who flip from being in truth to all of a sudden being atheists now. Now you're seeing prophecy work. When Thoughts, Camera, Action was on a roll, sharing the knowledge, making music about the knowledge, having podcasts, t-shirts, memorabilia about the knowledge, now completely switch to now it's just atheism. That's the Most High purging his branches of righteousness. He's purging those who he knew weren't going to make it. So we must be in this wilderness or this phase of the wilderness now. So when struggle comes upon you, like the two people I've posted that serve as a testimony to how they think, the mentality of, I don't care anymore, I can't do this anymore. What comes next after that is desperation. It's people who have never been violent in their lives become violent. People who have never stolen in their lives start to steal. People who have never had a thought of murder cross their mind, now that's all they think about, to get abundance and sustenance just for a day. They're not thinking ahead of time as, oh, I got to prepare by doing wickedness to stock me up. No, it's going to be a 5 minutes pleasure for a 1 day supply of sustenance. And you have no idea who's looking at you. You have no idea when you leave out your apartment, your townhome, your houses, what neighbor is looking at you like food. If it all goes down, are you the first person they're going to go to? So we better start learning how to rely on the Most High Yahuwah and not in vain. He also mentioned manna. He was questioning, he doesn't know, or he wasn't 100% certain that we were going to receive manna since it being the second Exodus and it happened during the first Exodus. And then I started thinking that maybe we should start learning how to make our own bread, because that's what it was like coriander seed, it said. Like very light seeds. I mean, you could pick it up and eat it, but they were using it to make bread. So I know any of us had like a grinder or something, like a grain that you could send through like the wheel to grind it, and then you knead it into the dough to make it as bread. Like I can't even remember if I did that during home ec. Now I'm showing my age. If any of you Gen Xers in elementary and middle school did home ec, that was what it was. It was basically learning how to sew and cook. I mean, I think it was a great class, to tell you the truth, to go to home ec, because you learned how to at least do something for yourself. I mean, if you had a hole in your garment, like you knew how to. I got even today, I know how to sew only because I took home ec class. So I found the verse where it talks about manna being received upon the earth again in 2 Baruch chapter 29, verses 1 through 8. It says, "And he answered and said unto me, Whatsoever will then befall will befall the whole earth. Therefore, all who live will live experience them. For at that time I will protect only those who are found in those selfsame days in this land. And it shall come to pass when all is accomplished that was to come to pass in those parts, that Hamashiach shall then begin to be revealed, and the behemoth shall be revealed from his place, and Leviathan shall ascend from the sea, those two great monsters which I created on the fifth day of creation, and shall have kept until that time, and then they shall be for food for all that are left." The two great monsters, the behemoth and Leviathan, are somewhere in this land hidden, or in this world hidden. Now, you would think the behemoth would be somewhere where it's cold, since it's a great big kind of elephant monster that would need to be somewhere warm. I mean, it's somewhere cool and not be seen. It could be beyond that ice wall. That's how big that thing probably is. It's probably out there, it's just walking around. The Most High has given it whatever food or whatever that thing eats. He could be walking around beyond that ice wall, which is the reason why we're not allowed to go out there. Any nation is allowed to go out there. And it was really weird to me that they haven't tried to go out there. I mean, they did once by the Admiral Byrd, I think his name was. He went out to the ice wall. But now they have so much technology to drive or fly out, not drive, but fly out there. Take helicopter, take drones, and pretty much run it into the wall of the firmament. If they so want to so desperately defy the Most High God, like Nimrod did, shooting arrows up into the sky, why wouldn't they go sideways instead of why they keep going upward? Why they keep crashing those rockets up into the firmament? Why didn't they just go to the side and see how far it goes out there? Like I said, man does not have that as much power as y'all think he has. If you really wanted to expose that the Most High God's not going to do anything, it's completely go through all his creation, go to the depths of it and go to the ends of it and see where it is and prove it to yourself. That's because they're scared. They may talk this crazy talk that there is no God and pumping up the chest of these atheists and nihilists, but at the end of the day, they all are afraid. They all know scripture is true. They know the Most High Yahuwah has never lied in any of his words. They can manipulate it all they want, but at the end of the day, they are scared because they know their time is nigh. And then the Leviathan is somewhere. I'm guessing it has to be somewhere in Australia. That's where all the creepy looking animals are. It's like, you've seen in passing on social media when they talk about what's being caught in Australian waters. It's some crazy monstrosity that has never ever been lurking in the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean. There's always some weird type of fish that you see out there when people say they catch something out there. So I can see the Leviathan being deep, deep, deep in those waters out there, just waiting. The earth also shall yield its fruit 10,000-fold, and on each vine there shall be 1,000 branches. And each branch shall produce 1,000 clusters, and each cluster produce 1,000 grapes, and each grape produce a core of wine. And those who have hungered shall rejoice. Moreover, also, they shall behold marvels every day. Just like we've seen in the first Exodus, marvels every day, plagues almost every day, the miracles of Yahuwah's power almost every day. For wind shall go forth from forming to bring every morning the fragrance of aromatic fruits, and at the close of the day, clouds distilling the dew of health. And it shall come to pass at that selfsame time that the treasury of manna shall again descend from on high, and they will eat of it in those years, because these are they who have come to the consummation of time. Now, is this the time when we are leaving in the second Exodus, or this is the time where everything is going to be destroyed? Like I said, if it's coming at the end of, after Satan's thousand year, being released after 1,000 years, is it after that? Or is it after this period in this generation, after the years of tribulation, Yahushua coming back, we have our second Exodus, and then the nations get destroyed and everything turns back over to the children of Yaakov, like it's mentioned in Ezra. Esau is the end of the world and Jacob is the beginning of it that follows it. That's where we're going to see manna again. So it's two periods that I'm thinking about, but I'm assuming that it's the second Exodus that the manna is going to descend once we are back in our land. Like he says, for at that time, I will protect only those who are found in those selfsame days in this land. Now we're going back to Africa. We're going back to where we were taken from. Once we go back there, then he's going to protect us. Then he's going to bring all the nations, Gog and Magog, down to Yasharel to destroy them. And the prophecies of Ezekiel. So it's exciting. We're literally going to be retracing the footsteps of our ancestors and forefathers, with the Gentiles being able to cleave unto us and joining us and seeing the same marvels we are going to see. It's going to be exciting. A lot of us are going to be dropping tears just from joy, just from having our faith justified and validated that we got to this point through enduring everything that we've been through, even though we haven't been through all of it yet. It's still exciting. I wanted to talk about Yehuda's folly, and again, how Jubilees and Yasher kind of contradict each other. In Jubilees 41:1, it says, and in the 45th Jubilee, in the second week, and in the second year, Yehuda took for his firstborn heir a woman from the daughters of Aram named Tamar. Now in Yasher 45, it says, and in 23, it says, and in those days, Yehuda went to the house of Shem and took Tamar, the daughter of Elam, the son of Shem, for a woman for his firstborn heir. Now, Tamar is said to come from Aram, and then Yasher, Tamar is said to come from Elam. Now, like I said, is it a big difference? No, because they both came from the bloodline of Shem. Shem's sons is Elam, Aram, Ashur, so forth. So, I mean, they still come from the bloodline of Shem, but I don't see how they could mess that up with that lineage. Of Tamar came from. In Jubilees 41:2-7, it says, but he hated and did not lie with her, because his mother was of the daughters of Canaan, and he wished to take him a woman of the kinsfolk of his mother, but Yehuda his father would not permit him. So he wanted his woman to be a Canaanite. And Yehuda was like, nah. And it's funny because they were warned not to mingle with the nations of the Canaanites, and yet they did. Even when they had to destroy the whole entire tribe of Canaanites, like Shechem and the other outlying tribes of Canaanites, they destroyed them, and yet they still took from them women that was not of the tribe. And it's talked about in Tobit how even Tobit was told, like, take a woman from the tribe of your fathers. Do not take a strange woman to be your bride. So, Er didn't want Tamar. And this firstborn of Yehuda was wicked, and Yehuda slew him. This is Jubilees. I'm going to go back into Yasher and how they changed. And Yehuda said unto Onan, his brother, go and unto your brother's woman, and perform the duty of a man's brother unto her, and raise up seed unto your brother. And Onan knew that the seed would not be his, but his brother's only. And he went into the house of his brother's woman and spilt the seed on the ground. My man pulled and prayed. And he was wicked in the eyes of Yehuah, and he slew him. And Yehuda said unto Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain in your father's house as a widow. Tell Shelah, my son, be grown up, and I shall give you to him to be his woman. And he grew up, and Bethuel, the woman of Yehuda, did not permit her son Shelah to marry. And Bethuel, the woman of Yehuda, died in the fifth year of this week. Yasher 23 through 27 says, and in those days, Yehuda went to the house of Shem and took Tamar, the daughter of Elon, the son of Shem, for a woman for his firstborn heir. And Er came to his woman Tamar, and she became his woman. And when he came to her, he outwardly destroyed his seed. So he also pulled out and prayed. And his work was evil in the sight of Yehuah, and Yehuah slew him. And it was after the death of Er, Yehuda's firstborn, that Yehuda said unto Onan, go to your brother's woman and marry her as the next of kin and raise up seed to your brother. And Onan took Tamar for a woman, and he came to her, and Onan also did like unto the work of his brother, and his work was evil in the sight of Yehuah, and he slew him also. And when Onan died, Yehuda said unto Tamar, remain in your father's house until my son Shiloh. So this is the slight difference. And Jubilees, he's called Shelah, and then Yasher, he's called Shiloh, shall have grown up. And Yehuda did no more delight in Tamar to give her unto Shiloh. For he said, perchance he will also die like his brother. So when he grew up, he's like, nah, I don't want him to also go on unto her and then pull out and spill the seed on the ground like his two brothers did. And then he also be destroyed. Now, what name I'm going to call him, Shelah or Shiloh? Is Shiloh in the Bible as a city named after Yehuda's son? Could it be? Jubilees 41:10 through 28, but I'm going to skip around a little bit. And as Yehuda was going along, he found her and thought her to be a harlot. So what Tamar did, and you know the story, she took off her widow apparel. She got glammed up as a prostitute, and she sat in the gates. And so when Yehuda came in, he was going along, he found her. He thought her to be a harlot, and he said unto her, let me come in unto you. And she said unto him, come in, and he went in. So this man coming from off shearing sheep, didn't go to his wife. He saw a prostitute. Mind you, she was all covered up. So how horny was this bro? How promiscuous was Yehuda? In those days, you weren't seeing thigh, you weren't seeing feet, you weren't seeing legs, you weren't seeing breast. She was completely covered up. But he known her to be a harlot because that's what harlots did then, the same what they do today. They sit on street corners. So he was that horny from coming off from shearing sheep. And just whatever he saw, he was like, yeah, let me come in unto you. And she's like, all right. And she said unto him, give me my hire. And he said unto her, I have nothing in my hand save my ring that is on my finger and my necklace and my staff, which is in my hand. And she said unto him, give them to me until you do send me my hire. And he said unto her, I will send unto you a kid of goats. And he gave them to her, and she conceived by him. And Yehuda went unto his sheep, and she went to her father's house. And Yehuda acknowledged that the deed which he had done was evil, for he had lain with his daughter-in-law, and he esteemed it hateful in the eyes. And he esteemed it hateful in his eyes, and he acknowledged that he had transgressed and gone astray, for he had uncovered the skirt of his son, and he began to lament and to supplicate before Yehuah because of his transgression. Now back to Jubilees. So she caught him. So he wanted her to be brought forth and burned because she played the harlot. And he didn't know this at the time. So when he went back to shear his sheep, somebody told him, like, yo, did you know? After 3 months, he was like, did you know Tamar, your daughter-in-law is pregnant? He said, what? All right, even though he was gonna give Shiloh to her anyway, he wanted justice and judgment done. So he went to the father's house, Tamar's father's house, told her to bring her out And they all, even her brothers and Tamar's father, were going to burn her. And then she said, well, whose are these? So she brought out the staff. Everything that Yehuda gave her, he brought out. She brought out. He said, no, I'm having a baby by you. So this is where he lamented for what he'd done because he was tricked. Being promiscuous, being a whore, being lascivious, fornicating is what got Yehuda into this mess. And we told him in a dream that it was forgiven him because he supplicated earnestly and lamented and did not again commit it. He did it one time. And this is before the Torah. This is before the Ruach HaKodesh. But imagine a dream coming, like an angel coming into the dream and say, hey, we get it. We forgive you. Now you've learned your lesson. But do you think the Most High Yahuwah pardoned Yehuda for this transgression? We'll read on and see. And he received forgiveness because he turned from his sin and from his ignorance, for he transgressed greatly before our Elohim. And everyone that acts thus, everyone who lies with his mother-in-law, let them burn him with fire, that he may burn them therein, for there is uncleanness and pollution upon them. With fire let them burn them. And do you command the children of Yisrael, there be no uncleanness amongst them? For everyone who lies with his daughter-in-law or with his mother-in-law has wrought uncleanness. With fire let them burn the man who has lain with her, and likewise the woman, and will turn away the wrath and punishment from Yisrael. So if you go to Deuteronomy and you go through Leviticus, the reason why there are laws, even though people complain like, oh, it's 613, the reason why there are laws is because somebody along those lines have already committed those acts. And it's the last time they were ever gotten to commit them. So if they're talking about do not lay with the mother-in-law, sister-in-law, just like you wouldn't lay with your sister, your brother, or your own children, it's because somebody already did it. And it wrought uncleanness. And what uncleanness came up out of that was whatever happened in the days of Noah that made people so hypersexual that destroyed their bloodlines, mangled their bloodlines, just like the European has done today. If you look up the Habsburg jaw, that's uncleanness. Now you see what uncleanness does to a bloodline. They have that that prominent underbite. And if you read about King Charles, like they said this man's head was full of water, that most of his intestines were liquefied. They didn't even know how this man was alive. And he drooled, he was dumb, and he didn't last. I mean, he lasted longer than what they expected, but he did not last long to rule. And if you go into the Spanish houses and all that, where the Habsburg jaw reached, that's from them mangling their bloodline by marrying their first cousin, marrying their aunts, marrying their nieces, just to keep royalty in their bloodline. But again, it's like that because they got it from somewhere. They know, they learned it from us. Like, oh, the nation of Yisrael stuck closely to their bloodline. The Bible stuck closely to the bloodlines when they married with each other. And the Europeans took it above and beyond because their bloodlines are already mangled with Neanderthal DNA. So you keep crossing those things so close together that Neanderthal DNA, along with Homo sapien DNA, you don't know what's going to happen. This is why we have Rh negative bloodlines and Rh positive bloodlines. And when a woman is pregnant who is Rh positive with a Rh negative bloodline baby, the womb mangles the Rh negative bloodline, or the womb, as if it's a foreign object. It kills its own self because it's a foreign object. That's how mangled these European bloodlines are. Mangled. This is why there are laws in Leviticus and Deuteronomy about sleeping with close relatives. Back to the story. And unto Yehuda, we said that his two sons had not lain with her. For this reason, his seed was established for a second generation. It would not be rooted out. So they're going to allow Tamar to have these twins. So she got twins. Just like his grandmother Rebecca, Rivka, got twins with Yaakov and Esau. So twins runs in our bloodline. I have a brother and sister who are fraternal twins. So twins runs in the tribe of Yehuda. And unto Yehuda we said that his two sons had not lain with her, but they went unto her and pulled out. So that doesn't really qualify as sex? I'm just questioning it, because, I mean, a lot of us have been pulling and praying. So does that not qualify as us laying with a woman? He said, for this reason, his seed was established for a second generation and would not be rooted out. So it didn't count because Er and Onan didn't conceive with Tamar. They pulled out. Did they pull out maybe one time, two times? Like, I would like to know the number of how many times they went unto her and pulled out. Was it just one time? And they were like, and then the Most High said, nah, I'm not doing this, and destroyed them. And it says, for in singleness of eye, he had gone and sought for punishment, namely according to the judgment of Abraham, which he had commanded his sons, Yehuda, had sought to burn her with fire. So he thought on the strength of his sons, Onan and Er, that Tamar was going to burn. And it was the judgment of Abraham. So Abraham set in motion the laws of what we know of the Torah. Not all of them, but some of them. Now, when I said that, did Yahuwah pardon Yehuda for his uncleanness? Even though he may have forgiven him, what Yehuda set in our bloodline speaks volumes. When I bring guests on this show and they talk about struggling with lust, struggling with fornication, struggling with porn, I'm guaranteeing you it's because of our tribe or because of Yehuda that this has been in our bloodlines, and it's something that we had to struggle with if you read the testaments of the 12 patriarchs. Now, it's not in the Sefer, but they do have it in other versions. I got the one James H. Charlesworth, the Old Testament Pseudepigrapha. They got volume 1 and they got volume 2. It's called the Apocalyptic Literature and Testaments. Obviously, since it's translated by a European, they put Lord God in it. But you could read through that, through all that, and find the, I guess, the meat after you leave the bones. So I'm going to start with 14 in the Testament of Yehuda. It says, chapter 14 through 17, it says, and now, my children, I tell you, do not be drunk with wine, because wine perverts the mind from the truth, arouses the impulses of desire, and leads the eyes into the path of error. For the spirit of promiscuity has wine as its servant for the indulgence of the mind. If any one of you drinks wine to the point of drunkenness, your mind is confused by sordid thoughts, and your body is kindled by pleasure to commit adultery. Thus, he commits sin and is unashamed. Such is the drunkard, my children. He who is drunken has respect for no one. See, even I was deceived, so that I was not ashamed before the throng in the city, because before the eyes of all, I turned aside to Tamar and committed a great sin, and disclosed to my sons my acts of uncleanness. When I had drunk wine, I flouted shamelessly God's command and took the Canaanite woman. He who drinks wine needs much perception, my children, and this is the perception the wine drinker requires. So long as he is decent, he may drink. But if he exceeds the limit, the spirit of error invades his mind and makes the drunkard become foul-mouthed and lawless. Yet rather than be ashamed, he boasts and it is dishonorable action and considers it to be fine. So now we have a little bit more meat of the story of Yehuda. So he came from off that field, drunk or lit, and he saw a prostitute. And what do you do when you're drunk and horny? You don't care. You throw caution to the wind. You give up your money. Y'all been in strip clubs and been drunk before and then be embarrassed when you leave the strip club and you took more money out than you wanted to take out to give a stripper. We've been there. We've been there before. We know how it is when we're drunk and horny. We throw caution to the wind. We don't care. We don't care how we're going to get home. We don't care what happens to us the next day. We don't care how much money we spent. This is a curse that's been in our bloodlines, and that coming from our parents and just our grandparents, but it goes all the way back to Yehuda. Go back to this. He not did this once. He did twice, because then he did it with Tamar, and then he says that his wife that he got, the Canaanite woman, he did it with her. So I'm assuming that Yehuda was drunk when he saw this Canaanite woman and horny, and then he slept with her, and then he had no choice but to make her his wife. So when he had these two kids, why do you think these two kids were disobedient? Because Yehuda was disobedient. That's what he's admitting to. So it's literally his fault that his first two sons were just as wicked. Because it ain't like he sought after this Canaanite woman in righteousness and in love. He was probably drunk and horny, saw her, and did the same thing he did with her, he did with Tamar. He repeated, except this time it was his sister-in-law. So this is the time the Most High said, look, you need to slow down. I'll let you go with this warning. But obviously you didn't learn your lesson the second time. So that's when he stopped. Completely stopped. Now, there isn't anywhere in scripture that reads that he went to another woman this way, in this same manner. The promiscuous man is unaware when he has been harmed and shameless, when he has been disgraced. For even some who is a king, if he is promiscuous, is divested of his kingship, since he has been enslaved by sexual impulses, just as I experienced. Damn. Enslaved by sexual impulses. Enslaved. So this happened more than once. There's a reason why y'all struggle with lust, porn, and lasciviousness. Enslaved. You don't know where it comes from. You know why it's in your bloodline. You know, you think it comes from just your father. You think it comes from just your grandfather. And I love that your brothers come on and admit that it does come from the fraternal side. I have never yet heard any of my guests say, oh, I'm like this because of my mother's side. I haven't heard it yet. When I talk to the brothers, it's been from their father's side. So it makes even more sense that I read this story to you, or this testament. For I gave my staff, that is the stability of my tribe, my girdle, that is my power, my crown, that is my glory of my kingdom. Damn. We out here just giving money, debt fiat currency. But Yehuda is saying, I'm giving everything. Even if I didn't have that monetary value, I'm giving the symbols of my power, the symbol of my inheritance, the symbol of my kingship. And that's exactly what y'all do when y'all jump from bed to bed. When y'all fornicate, when y'all commit adultery, that is exactly what you're doing. If it's not in your actions and it's in your skin or your flesh or in your mind, your thoughts, that is what you're getting ready to do. You're getting ready to give up your throne. You're getting ready to give up your power. You're getting ready to give up your kingship. And who's going to take it away if you are giving it up? The Most High Yahuwah is going to take it away from you and give it to somebody who deserves it. Just like he took away the kingdom from Saul and gave it to his servant David. You think the Most High doesn't have another man waiting in the wings to complete the task that you couldn't complete? Don't think it will not happen. I've seen it only from my side of it. For if I chose to be righteous, I chose to not have an unequally yoked household, the Most High took away one woman and gave me another woman who was willing, in Ruach and in flesh, was willing to complete the task that the other woman did not want to complete. So it's the same for you, fellas. If you cannot be a proper coverer, the Most High will sit you down, bring in another who can complete the task that you can't do because of your promiscuity. Now, is this what you want? Especially in this time frame and this generation where the women, I think y'all want to go back into this dating pool in this generation. I don't think you want to. For me, looking at this pond, that pond is like sewage. With like maybe like pockets of clear water, pockets of fresh water. But you really want to go out into that pond to see where this fresh water is? I doubt it. I doubt it. And you heard the testimony of brothers coming on here talking about they almost got a stroke because they wouldn't leave lasciviousness and porn alone. Since I repented of these acts, I consumed neither wine nor meat until my old age. So my man put down the alcohol. That almost sounds like me. It came to a point where I couldn't handle alcohol. I couldn't handle alcohol anymore. I couldn't handle hard liquor. And I knew this. I started to understand this when I looked back on the last years of my professional football career. I used to drink heavily and be able to bounce back up and go to work the next day. It came a point where I was missing meetings. I'm talking about I wasn't even drinking that much, but I was drunk to a point where I was missing meetings that they had to send personnel to my house to wake me up to come get me to go to work. That's how bad it was. I think I remember when I went to the Washington Redskins in free agency, and we were playing the Baltimore Ravens, and they had like a welcome to DC party with me. J. Cole was there, Wale was there, and at the time me and Wale was semi-close. And I got so drunk there that I went to work the next day. I was doing drills drunk. Like, everybody was laughing at me because they could tell I was still drunk. I went to bed, knowing I had a game against the Baltimore Ravens, I was still drunk for some reason. Still, I was still coming off a hangover. I went out there and played, fall down, fumbled, because I was still slightly drunk. That's how I knew I could no longer handle drinking in that age. I couldn't. So when I stepped away from football, I went through the whole wilderness of myself. I was like, you know what? I can't do hard liquor anymore. I just can't. I don't know where it's going to lead me. I tried to go back into it one time. I went to Tootsie's. Was this a big strip club out here? I went to Tootsie's, got drunk, drove home. Matter of fact, I didn't even make it home. I drove and didn't know where I was going. I parked my car, then police knocked on the window. I parked it on a random side of the street in a residential neighborhood. 4 or 5 police officers knocked on the window. I come out. One of them tried to goad me into an argument. And I was just so drunk, I was out of it. And they called the cab for me. Luckily, called the cab for me. I get in the cab, don't know the address, but I only knew my credit card number, but didn't know where I was going. This man dropped me from, I was 10, 15 minutes away from my house. He dropped me in the middle of Miami. I literally slept underneath a business building. I was there all night. I slept there for, I want to say, like 3 in the morning. I woke up like 7 or 8 in the morning. The only way I woke up, because a woman was walking over top of me to go to work. I could have been robbed. I could have been killed. I could have been maimed. I could have been out there naked. I had my phone, I had my wallet, everything was still on me. The Most High truly looked after me during that time. I woke up and I had to pick up my daughter that day. I woke up and didn't know where I was. So I'm walking down the residential street. I asked the brother, hey, what time is it? He's like, oh, it's 12 something. I had to hail a cab, go all the way up to Fort Lauderdale. I was in Miami. I had to go all the way up to Fort Lauderdale, where I lived at the time. Go to the bank to pay the taxi cab driver, took a shower, and then go pick up my daughter. That's what type of time I was on. This is the reason why my child custody schedule was so mangled with my daughter, because I was not in the right frame of mind to have a child with me more, even 50-50. The Most High knew that. And the Most High would not allow me to win in court against my child's mother because he knew the state I was in spiritually and mentally. But he looked out for me. He could have destroyed me on that street. He could have. He goes like, he's not going to get it. He's going to continue to go out. He's going to continue to drink. He's not going to learn. That's the long suffering and the grace and the mercy that I choose not to play with the Most High Yahuwah. Back to the story though. I consumed neither wine nor meat until my old age, and I saw no merriment at all. And the angel of the Lord, angel of Yahuwah, showed me that women have the mastery over both king and poor man. From the king, they will take away his glory. From the viril man, his power. And from the poor man, even the slight support that he has in his poverty. Take care to temper it with wine, my children, for there are in it four evil spirits: desire, heated passion, debauchery, and sordid greed. If you drink wine in merriment, showing due respect for the fear of the Most High Yahuwah, you shall live. But if you drink without restraint, and fear of Yahuwah departs, the result is drunkenness and shamelessness sneaks in. But if you wish to live prudently, abstain completely from drinking in order that you might not sin by uttering lewd words, by fighting, by slander, by transgressing Yahuwah's commands. Then you shall not die before your allotted time. The mysteries of Yahuwah and men wine discloses, just as I disclosed to the Canaanite woman the commandments of Yahuwah and the mysteries of Yaakov, my father, which Yahuwah had told me not to reveal. So he got drunk and went pillow talking, telling the mysteries to a foreign nation. Certain things we aren't supposed to be telling. But he told because of drinking. How many times have you blabbed your mouth because you were drunk? How many secrets did you let spew out of your mouth, either yours or somebody else's, because you were drunk? And now, my children, I command you not to love money or to gaze on the beauty of women, because it was on account of money and attractive appearance that I was led astray to Bathsheba, the Canaanite. And I know that on account of these two things, my tribe is doomed to wickedness. And I know that on account of these two things, what is it? Money and attractive women, that we are doomed to wickedness. For even the wise men from among my sons will be changed for the worse. And the kingdom of Yehuda, they shall cause to be diminished, though Yahuwah gave it to me because of my obedience to my father. For at no time did I bring grief to Yaakov, my father, because everything he said, I did. And Abraham, my father's father, blessed me as I destined to be king in Yisrael. And Yaakov blessed me similarly. And so I know that through me, the kingdom will be established. So because of Yehuda, we struggle with fornication, drunkenness, porn, lust, going after money. But through all that, through the obedience also of Yehuda, which is a blessing throughout our generations, because we are obedient, we shall never lose our crown. We shall never lose our power. We shall never lose our kingdom.